So, you know, we've been talking about this idea of sending and what that means for us, both as a church as a whole, sending out a church plant next fall. And for some of us, that may mean heading up to Happy Valley. For some of us, it may mean staying here. It may mean going on staff. It may mean all these different things that Jim mentioned last night. But what we know is that for all of us, the reality is the Lord is sending us out. Even as we get back to campus later today, the Lord sends us back there to be his agents of reconciliation, as Morgan talked about last night. So regardless of where we're at in that, regardless of what that sending looks like, what would you say to someone who's trying to discern, where do I go? Who do I go to? What does it look like to go? And then as we're going, what are some practical things to keep in mind? Like, what do we do once we get there? Once we are following the Lord in the sending? I'm going to let you kind of take it over. I feel like you passed the test, so, you know, go for it.
Thank you. Thanks, Christian. So whether you're going to Penn State, I'm going to stand up now. It's not because this is any more important than what I've already said. It's just I've sat for a long time. Whether I'm going to Penn State or physics class, how am I being sent? What does that mean? Before we kind of start, I want to give you guys some practical, like just really a good filter to think through. What is God calling me to? That's what I want to do this morning. How do I know that? But before we get into the practical, I want to start with the invitation of Jesus. He gives us an invitation in Mark 16, verse 15. He says this, "Go into all the world and proclaim the gospel to the whole creation." So when we're talking about a sent life, or, I mean, there's so many ways we say this in like Christendom, like language, like, I want to live sent. I want to determine my calling. Like, those are fine phrases. But at the end of the day, what we're talking about is agreeing that the invitation of Jesus is essentially what we're trying to determine, trying to discern. What does it mean for me to go into all the world and proclaim the gospel to the whole creation? So whatever answers that we're discerning when we're asking ourselves these questions of calling or sentness, they have to align with Jesus's broad invitation to go into all the world and proclaim the gospel to all creation. It has to be a derivative of this, that we are going, we are being sent to a space in which we get to tell people the good news that Jesus is making all things new, including you and me. Like, that has to be the oh man, it has been a long time since I've taken math, but I'm sure you guys can help me. Common denominator, right? Like, that has to be the common denominator. I was a religion major, so I didn't need to take math. Now as a church planter, I realize I have to do my own budget. So this has to be our common denominator. The premise has to be agreed upon that when we're talking about calling or sentness, this is what we're talking about. Everybody kind of get on board with that? Like, that's a pretty agreeable statement, I think, right? Okay. One woo. Okay. You're tapping into my, like, adopted Canadian idea that I have to make you like me. And, like, I'm nice, and I say sorry for things that I didn't do. So that's why I wanted to start with a really agreeable statement, that calling and sentness is wrestling with the idea of God is calling me. Jesus is inviting me. He wants me to participate and go into the world and proclaim the gospel, this good news that he's making all things new. That's easy to agree with. Here's the tension with Jesus's invitation. Where do we go? Like, Jesus, you are telling me to go into all the world, into all creation, the whole entire cosmos. What does that mean? When we think about that, we can want to embrace this invitation so bad, and yet the breadth of the context Jesus gives us leaves us paralyzed. And that is a helpless place to feel. Like, I'm just thinking, it is super discouraging to want to please Jesus so bad and not know how to do it. Has anybody felt like that? Like, where you're like, Jesus, I promise, like, I really want to please you, and yet I just don't know forward from backward. I don't know how to press on. I felt this way 4 years ago. I occasionally always feel this way, but I felt this way particularly 4 years ago. My wife and I were living in Radford. We're at a church planting apprenticeship at a church there, which was really good and healthy. We moved to Radford for this reason, to help discern, God, are you calling us to plant a church? And if so, we're. And so we moved there. I'm like meeting weekly with my pastor, who's my mentor. I'm working on Tex Campus. Is Next Door Bake Shop still there? Yeah. That's where we'd meet. That is where the first conversation about the Karen took place. I was like passing that building the other day. I was being a responsible driver, didn't look to see if like it was still there, but I was thinking about that, like, man, God, like 3 years ago, you started this little kernel of dream there. But anyway, I'm having the conversation with my mentor saying, I'm 29 years old. I moved to Radford to help discern what God wants Zoe and I to do. We've been here a year. I don't feel any closer to that answer. And I feel like I'm just kind of like, before I know it, I'm going to look back and my life is going to be gone. And I won't have like done anything of significance or that just enlivens me. And I remember telling him, like, it felt like I was on the end of this pier looking out at the ocean, and all I could see was fog. And I knew there was a ship out there somewhere. I could almost see like just the slightest contrast in the fog that gave me hope there probably is some journey out there for me. And yet the fog isn't dissipating. Like, I can't press on. I'm not going to like be able to walk on water towards this shadow of a thing, I think. And it doesn't seem to be coming to me. And like, what do I do? Like, I just remember in frustration asking, what do I do? And so if you feel this way, like, I think this is a very common feeling, where people who are walking with Jesus, they want to please him. They know he has some journey out there for them. And yet we feel like we are in this fog. And we feel it together. We feel it alone. And so before I move on to like what I've found helpful, I just want to address some of the unhealthy ways we think about calling that I think kind of stirs up this fog and leaves us frustrated. And so the first unhealthy way that I think we consider calling or sentness is that there's this underlying assumption we're only going to be able to answer this question a couple times in our life. Like, when we think about the question of what is God calling me to, I think a lot of us operate with the assumption of like, there's only going to be a few swings at getting this question right. And most of the swings happen in watershed moments of our life, when we graduate high school, when we graduate college, when we take on a career, when we start a family or get married, when we maybe change a career. And these are the only spaces in which God kind of like opens up a portal in order to answer this question. And the anxiety and the fear that comes with that is, if I get this question wrong now, when I'm leaving Blacksburg, then I'm going to live a season of kind of butterfly effect of unfaithfulness, where it's just like, well, I've gotten this first primary question wrong, so like all other things kind of fall in line, and they're just kind of like a derivative of this wrong answer that I've made. And so, man, that is a anxious place to be. I think there's a couple actually emotional realities that surround this wrong idea of calling. And anxiety and fear is one of them, like where we're so afraid of making the wrong answer. And that anxiety and fear only builds as this watershed moments start to creep in on us. So maybe if you're a senior here or even a junior, or like you're getting ready to like decide whether or not to leave Blacksburg, as you see that season approaching, that anxiety and fear just becomes more acute. And here's the good news of Jesus. He has given you a new life free of those things. He raised from the dead and defeated fear and anxiety. He doesn't want us to live that way. The other emotional reality that comes with this assumption is actually the opposite end, where it's like passivity, right? Like maybe you're a freshman here or sophomore. The next watershed moment in your life is kind of like, it's out there, you know, but you're not really approaching it. And it can lead to like, well, I don't really need to answer that question right now. I don't need to wrestle with like what God's sending me to, because he's not going to send me anywhere for another 3 years. Or maybe you've just passed that watershed moment and it's like, well, this is my reality. And so I'm just going to suffer until the next one, you know, the next chance I get to answer this. But again, Jesus has died and raised from the dead, not just to defeat fear and anxiety, but to call us out of passivity into an abundant life in his kingdom project. And so this assumption can't be true because of the good news of Jesus, because of the gospel. His mercies are new every morning. He reawakens us every morning to be able to answer this question, to be able to wrestle with, where are you sending me today? And so you don't have to live with these kind of barnacles that attach themselves to this question. Fear, anxiety, passivity. If you're a student here, you are going to get to answer this question on a regular basis. At the very least, you should be wrestling heavy with this question of sentness at the start of every semester, at the start of every break, going, God, what classes am I in? What clubs am I in? What's my rhythm going to look like this fall semester, this winter break, or whatever it looks like? And how are you arranging that life to be a life where I go and tell the world, go and proclaim the gospel that you're making all things new? So the first unhealthy assumption is I only get a few chances to make this answer. And the second unhealthy assumption is that we have to answer this question with something sacred. So when I was in high school, before I really started following Jesus and getting a vision for what my life looked like, I wanted to be an architect. I talked to an architect at NLCF. Yeah, Jack, right? There we go. And I wanted to be one as a high schooler. And then I started following Jesus, and I had a really bad understanding of what is sacred and what is secular. And so I had very little imagination for how an architect can live faithfully in the kingdom of God, pursuing his vision of flourishing for humanity. And so what my Christian answer to this was is, I'm going to be an architect who designs churches. You know, I know it sounds ridiculous, okay? I was a teenager and young and stupid. But that was my answer, because in my mind, I had this kernel that was floating around in there that every vocation needed some type of sacred attachment to it in order to be a calling, to think of it as a calling. And we're going to look more deeply at that in a moment, but suffice it to say that this idea that every vocation needs some type of sacred attachment, that is a bastardization of the way God has made the world. It is not the way God has made the world. He did not make the world with the need to have these sacred attachments. Wendell Berry is one of my favorite authors. He says this. He says, there are no unsacred places. There are only sacred places and desecrated places. And so part of the vision when we're answering the question of calling and sentness, is that we, Jesus is going to send us into any space. And every single space has the potential to be sacred or desecrated. And he wants us to go and inhabit the whole creation. And that includes desecrated places of the world. And he wants us to re-sanctify them, to reimagine them, to renew them with the good hope of the gospel. And so what that means for us with this unhealthy assumption is we have to let go of this sacred, secular divide that we kind of just operate with. That we're, you know, sometimes the church is really bad at operating with this divide. And we need to embrace a, I'm just going to coin this phrase and then I'm going to use it forever, a Wendelian view of the world. Okay? We need to embrace a Wendelian view of the world. And so there, those are the two bad assumptions we make about calling. That we only get a few chances to answer the question, and then if we answer the question, we need to have some type of sacred attachment to it. So now, how are some healthy ways to think about this question? How do I actually start to get at an answer, start to see the fog lifting, some clarity coming into my view at the end of the pier? And so first, we need to embrace, I'm going to get a lot of opportunity to ask this question and to answer this question and to commune with God about it. I need to embrace that I can let go of this pressure to find some sacred bent toward my answer. And then, so those are the first two things we can do. And then I want to think through, what are the gifts God has given us to filter this question with? Because what we said early, that the tension of this question is like taking it from its broad context that Jesus gives and narrowing it down for what does that mean for me in this current moment of life, or maybe the next season of life. So we have to have some type of filter that helps us throw some things out. And in order to gain that filter, I think there's three things that can help us gain a filter. And they're found right at the beginning of the human project. At the very beginning of Genesis, God gifts humanity with three things. What are some of the things God gifts humanity with? Just throw them out. Relationship, okay. So he gifts humanity, the first human, with another human, right? That was one of the gifts he gives, that he gave humanity people, a community to belong to. So in Genesis 2:18, he says, it's not good that humans are alone, and he creates another human. And so, listen, when we're filtering the question of where am I being sent or called, here's a helpful thing to ask. Who are the people that I'm either being sent with or sent to? Who are the people I'm getting sent with or sent to? So for Adam, the community, the people filter was like, here's the person I'm going to do life with. This is the person I'm called, God has gifted me with to function and to pursue this human project alongside of. So for Adam, it was the people he was sent with. But for, so like for you, it might be, hey, here's my engage group. Here's the Penn State planting team. Here's my classmates. And then it might be the people you're sent to. So think about Paul, and he gains a vision for a Macedonian man. And that person represented a culture and a people group that he felt compelled to go to. And so that's one of the gifts God has given humanity, is that we do life with people. What's another gift he gifted humanity with? Okay, the ability to reason. What else? Come on. Okay, a relationship with him. There's some really obvious ones. You guys, who's teaching you guys? Hey, I'm just kidding. I'm going to be sent away, deported. All right, so what, the very first gift he gifts humans with is a job. It's a work, a vocation. Go, rule, subdue, work, keep the land, right? He gifts them. That is a gift. Our vocation, our work, our labor, it is a gift present at the very beginning of the human project. He gives us a vocation. The way we talk about it at the Cairn is he made us cultivators. We get to go out and we get to see the raw materials of the place that we're being sent, and we get to make them flourish. We, like I said earlier, we water them, we plant them, we till hard ground, and then we get to see these seeds of resurrection rise. That is our labor. That's our vocation. And it doesn't matter if you're in medicine or engineering, if you're doing agriculture, if you're working at a coffee shop, it doesn't matter what your work is. It is a gift in order to see kingdom cultivation happen. So vocation, people, there's another big one. Jesus. Yes, he gifted us Jesus. He gifted him Eden, right? Like a place. He gave them this garden to live and to do their job in. So our place is the garden where cultivation happens, where we work, where we labor. You know, for us, understanding the gift of place is understanding the reality that all living is local. You know, there's this big movement now, like, it's got to be local. And it's like, all of my life is local. I can't not be where I am. And so this has even been a good exercise for me to be in Virginia over the past week, because Virginia was home for me. It's where I grew up. I love this place. I love the New River Valley. Like, my best friends are here in the New River Valley. And yet, when I'm living in Canmore, sometimes I refer to Virginia as home, but really Canmore is where my faith is becoming embodied and practiced. It's my local place where I'm living. It's the place that God has gifted me. Places where our faith takes shape in reality. We learn to walk down Main Street and love it. We learn to go into a coffee shop and hear this wonderful Australian accent of somebody on a work visa and love that about Canmore. Place is a gift. So there's these three things, vocation and place and people. These three things, I submit to you, are ingrained into the fabric of the human project. They're important to all of us. And so when we're thinking about calling, these are three necessary and God-given realities for us to think through. What's my vocation going to be? What's my place going to be? What's my people going to be? And so when I think about calling, I think about Adam. Like, here's these three things he operated with to figure out what to do. And then you read on through the story of God in Scripture, and you see these people and these three things follow them around. Like, it doesn't matter who you're reading about, like Moses, Joshua, John the Baptist, Jesus, Paul, John, like all these people, they might prioritize one or the other, but all three are evident because they're part of the human project. They're gifts given to humanity. And so my practical counsel to you when you're thinking about calling is to think about these gifts. Vocation, place, and people, and let those be kind of a filtering system from going from broad to narrow, determining what sentness looks like for you. And here's the deal. Allow your personality, your interest, your hobbies to help shape which one is going to take a higher priority. I think God thinks all three are important. But that is not the same as saying you have to choose to start with one or the other, or you're wrong. I think he gifts us and makes us in unique ways where we can look at these three filters and go, God, like, what do you want me to start with? And I can start somewhere. That's the beauty of these three things. It allows us to, like, get off the pier and start seeing the fog lift, start making movement and discernment, start communing with God about what this invitation from Jesus is going to look like. And as we start to answer those things, we start to love the things that come with it. And sometimes that's work. Sometimes that's where the real formative work happens. Maybe it's like, man, I am going to do this job. Like, this is the job God has called me to do. And I don't care where I live. And I don't care what people are around me. I'm just going to go wherever this job is. I think that's totally fine. I think that's, God has gifted you with a passion for this vocation. Go pursue it. But here's the reality. You're going to go to whatever place that lands you in, whatever people that land you in, and those are going to be your places and people. And so God's going to have to do a lot of formative work to help you grow in affection for those things. Or maybe you're like, you know, I don't really care what job I do. I just want to live in this town. Man, go for it. Go live in that town. But understand there's going to be a vocation and a people that come with that place that God is going to have to cultivate affection for you to have. So maybe you're here and you're like, I didn't want to come to Virginia Tech. But I came because I'm pursuing this degree. And you're like, I don't love Blacksburg. I don't love the leaves that fall. I don't love the smell of decay in the fall. I don't know. It's hard for me to think of things why you wouldn't love the fall here in Blacksburg. But maybe that's your reality. Like, you're going to have to do some labor and allow God to come in and do some labor in your heart to grow affection for your place. So maybe that looks like going on a prayer walk with the weekly prayer walk and, like, learning a bigger, broader story of what's happening in Blacksburg and falling in love with this place. Maybe you're like, oh, I wanted to come to Blacksburg. Like, this was the school I wanted to come to. And, like, you've come and classes are really hard. And you're like, I don't want to go to class. But, like, for right now, that's the vocation God has you in. And so pursue it and grow and dive into it and see it as a place where God has led you and called you and gifted you with. So I'll use myself as an example here just to give you some, like, just some idea of what this looks like in practice. So I was telling you, we really were in a season of struggle to find this answer. And one of the ways we found it was by starting with this filter. Is, God, at the end of the day, like, where do you want us to begin? And Zoe and I had always felt a draw to mountain culture, these people who love being in creation. They don't know the Creator. They don't know that all this is going to be made new, even as beautiful and wonderful as it is. And they love to be out there, and we can join them in that. We're gifted and interested in that. So, like, that was always the place where we started. Like, these are the people. These are our people. Like, man, I want to sit at the pub at the end of a day and share a good story about being on a rope with my partner. Like, I mean, like, that's the type of people we want to be around. And so we started with that. That excited us. And then we started asking, like, if this is the type of people we want to be around, like, where do they live? Where's the places that they congregate? And so, I mean, we found a lot of different places, but Canmore, for a number of reasons, became the clear answer we felt like from God. And so we moved there. And like I said, when Christian was up here, like, Canmore is a difficult place. Like, it's lovely. I mean, it is beautiful. But at the same time, it's really hard. It's really hard to see friends and neighbors come through and leave. It's really lonely at times. It's a wealthy place, and that wealth has a tendency, it gives people the privilege to hide their brokenness, and it's frustrating. It's like, man, this is not, the facade I see down Main Street is not the reality that's happening here. And it's frustrating to work at trying to break down that wall. it just feels sometimes like you got a sledgehammer and you're just like pounding and it's not going anywhere. Our place is hard. Our place is beautiful, but it's hard. And God has had to do a lot of work in forming an affection, a deep affection for our place. Not just a, oh, it's a cool, beautiful place to live, but like, I love the people struggling here, you know. And then from there, we moved to vocation. So the question was like, am I going to plant a church? I feel called to shepherd people. Is it going to be a church plant? Am I going to be a pastor at an existing church? How are we going to pay the bills? It's an expensive place to live. But like that was further down our priority list of like pursuing this calling, pursuing being sent. You know, so for me, like 4 days a week, I'm elbow deep in thinset, setting tile with my father-in-law. Like that's just the nature of the vocation God has gifted me with alongside planting a church. And so, you know, is it my most favorite thing in the world? Absolutely not. And yet, God has given me like some level of affection of like, man, I get to go and create a beautiful space for people in which they can be hospitable and enjoy and find rest. And at the end of the day, like, there's beauty in being a craftsman. And God teaches me a lot about reality through that. But vocation, you know, was kind of the last answer we were looking for. And so, hey, that's not going to be your filter. That might not be your filter. It might not be the way you kind of level these things out. But the beauty of starting with these three gifts is that it gets you moving. It revives you out of paralysis to where you can start feeling like, oh, like I'm getting some traction here. Like I'm starting to gain answers. And like we said earlier, like part of the beauty of walking with Jesus is you don't know always what the script is going to be at the end of the semester or the break, but you know, hey, here's one way I can be faithful. Let me just ask, where's God going to have me work? Where am I going to live? What people am I going to be around? This is an invitation to you right now. Like, as you think through, where am I being sent? Where am I going to be called? Like, he is inviting you to go into all the world and proclaim the gospel to the whole creation. And in order to answer that, we have to ask holistic questions. We have to be real enough to say, like, this is going to consume all my life. It's going to consume the way I work and where I live, and what people I'm around. And that's a good and beautiful thing at the end of the day. He wants us to be consumed with him. Yeah, so I just want to pray for you. I know Christian's going to come back up, but I was thinking just as we were talking earlier, and the words of Jesus from John 20 came to mind. And this is from John 20, 21. Jesus said to them again, "Peace be with you. As the Father has sent me, even so I am sending you." And when he said this, he breathed on them and said, "Receive the Holy Spirit." God, thank you that we get to wrestle with sentness. And that even in wrestling with our sentness, your Son has identified with us because he was sent. That's just so comforting to me. Would you help to give us peace, just as Jesus promised peace to his disciples as we answer this question? In Jesus' name, amen. Oh, there he is.
Coming. yeah, thank you, Craig, for that word. I think, regardless of whether we're at that kind of like watershed moment or whether we're just kind of figuring out what does Monday look like for us, those questions are going to be super helpful. And so what we want to do now is just kind of open it up for some Q&A. We typically do this at our retreats, a chance for you guys to kind of dig in a little bit deeper on anything that Craig said. And so we're just going to open it up. I'll bring the mic to you so that everyone can hear. But who has questions? Just lift up that hand. I can squeeze through here. There you go.
So I have a question about, like, if you're wanting to work in ministry, but, like, you're getting a degree in something else, like, how does that play out?
Yeah, I think that, what do you mean by play out? Maybe give me a little bit more.
Sorry. like, let's say I have a degree in, like, engineering, and then, yeah, I want to do, like, something in ministry, like, within the church.
Yeah.
Like, I know that you can, like, have a role in the church and have a job on the side.
Yeah.
Like, how would you recommend, like, balancing that?
Yeah, so I think we have to, as a broader church, I think the movement is going to be more toward people working well in careers and still seeing, like, their ministry life in the church as, like, a beautiful calling. So, like, I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think we create this pressure on ourselves where it's like, I can only do one or the other well, and to pursue one wholeheartedly and to excel at it means I have to leave the other behind. And I don't think that's true. I think we can pursue, I hope this is true of myself, that I'm pursuing being a really good tile setter and being a really good pastor. Like, and would I love to one day be able to just be a pastor and set my trowel on the shelf and tell stories about the days I sat tile? Like, of course I would. But at the end of the day, we just have to be okay going, like, God might call us to be in the workplace and in the church doing vocational type of ministry, and, like, that's okay. Like, be a really great engineering student and yet still be really involved and pursue ministry and leadership at NLCF. Like, we don't have to create two separate categories there. What other questions do you have?
Hello.
Hey.
So earlier you said that trust produces rest.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, what are some steps that you've taken personally to build that trust?
Yeah, that's good. So part of this practice for us has been surrounding ourselves with people that tell us stories. So, like, tell us stories about God at work, like asking questions about God at work in their life, because what I need to know at the end of the day is God is working. And, like, my two eyes can't perceive enough. I have a hard time perceiving enough through my own two eyes to produce that trust. And so what I want to know is, like, Zoe, how are you seeing that happen? Like, Zach, Zarifa, like, all these people in our church, like, how are you seeing God at work? Because I need to build up a wealth of stories that I can look back to and go, like, God, you're working. Like, I can trust you. The same thing, even in a personal relationship, like, there has to be history and story that's built into that. And so part of the process for us building trust has just been some longevity in Canmore to where we start to see some of these stories take shape. But I think that's the most helpful practice. If you're here and you're like, I don't know if God's at work or not, like, the best thing you can do is surround yourself with people and tell stories about God at work. So, like, Megan and Christian do their Jubilee night. Do people know about that? Like,
Maroon Fam does.
Oh, okay. So, are you in Maroon Family?
I'm an Oak Family. Made the wrong choice. Made the wrong choice.
Have their battle lines have been drawn, I gather? But that night, if you don't know anything about it, that night is a night kind of designated to, like, tell us stories from the previous year of, like, how God has, like, moved and his kingdom shown through. And so we practice that as a church, like, around every Christmas. Like, our church does a Jubilee night, and we practice this as a means of, like, life together in the church, because we know it's that important to live life in community, hearing from other people who are seeing other things. So I think, like, if you want to start somewhere producing trust, especially in light of, like, God being at work, I think you have to start with your neighbor, your friend, your community, the people God's sending you with.
I'm not going to run because it's undignified.
David was undignified.
So I'm Dina, and I just wanted to ask, how do you combat the loneliness that you feel when you do go through moments of swelling and then not in the church?
Trust produces rest. Like, in all seriousness, God has just been really faithful. Like, I mean, after this summer, we lost 8 people this summer, which when you're a church of like 15 people, that's a lot of people. And so at the end of summer, we were like in a very severe state of loneliness, and me in particular. And so as a leadership team, we were talking about, like, how do we gain people? Like, how do we work to make connections and bring people? And, you know, we can strategize as much as we want. And we do those things, and we are faithful to do those things, and we run down those avenues that we kind of come up with. And some people have joined because of that, but also it's like, man, Zach, you know, who came from Virginia Tech, he led our prayer service last Sunday when I wasn't there, and he sent me a text like 4 new people showed up out of the blue, like people we're not connected with that just heard about us through some grapevine, you know? And so it's been like seasons like that where God has done his best storytelling to us of like, hey, here's this couple. We had this happen in the winter, like where we were kind of feeling in a season of that, and we show up at this house we were gathering at, and there's this couple that has just like heard through the grapevine of this house gathering and like was sitting at the doorstep waiting for the door to be open, you know? And you're like, literally God brought somebody to our doorstep, you know? So I, at the end of the day, like, we can strategize and we do that and we try to lean into one another. One of the things my mentor has said to me up there that's helped me to process is God is not calling me to be a faithful shepherd of the future 50 people that come to our church. He's calling me to be a faithful shepherd to the 10 that we have. And I want to do that well. Do I want the 50 future people to come and be their shepherd? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, like, God's calling me to be faithful to the people right here, right now. And we work at connecting with more, but that's who I'm shepherding. So
maybe time for one more. Yes. This is fitting that Blythe is going to ask Craig a question because, Meg, do you want to? There's no way Meg was going to let Craig get through this without seeing this picture.
Oh, yeah.
Well, my question was, why did you name your daughter Blythe?
Have you heard of Anne of Green Gables? So, Gilbert Blythe. My wife grew up on Prince Edward Island, so she, needless to say, was a huge Anne of Green Gables fan and has always liked that name. She likes old people names, so you have an old person name, according to my wife. Yeah, so her name's Hazel Blythe, and this is her. Yeah.
There you go.
There you go.
It's a beautiful thing. Yeah, we were never going to make it through this without seeing Blythe up here. That was just never going to happen.
I was wondering that. I was like, I can't remember if I sent Christian a picture of my family.
Auntie Meg almost let her down, but she redeemed herself. Well, can we just thank Craig again for being with us? Yes.